20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 397 of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. My name is Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at my brand new Twitter handle, at Andy Herman NFL. Scani Sports is gone, so if you haven't made the transition yet, make sure to follow me out at Andy Herman NFL. Of course, you can always find my writing at Cheesehead TV. I have a lot to talk to you about today, including Andrew Luck, Josh Jones, some new free agent signings, and much, much more. But let's not waste any time. Let's get started right away. And I want to kick off today with the surprise retirement of Andrew Luck. Of course, the news was announced on Saturday night, I think to the surprise of many. I think many people got the alert from Adam Schefter, myself included. I think a lot of us had to do a double, triple, and quadruple take, make sure it wasn't Sports Talk Barry, make sure it wasn't a variety of other people who have been known to do this type of thing in the past. Even then, you kind of wanted a couple seconds to think, you know, maybe Schefter was hacked, maybe something happened, maybe something went horribly wrong. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. Andrew Luck was, of course, in fact, retiring. And this was just such a huge bummer. From being one of the most talented quarterbacks in the league, from a player that's had to fight through a variety of different injuries, being, in my personal opinion, one of the more entertaining players in the league. I remember watching him at Stanford and being like, this is the first player that I've watched in college that has legitimately had some Aaron Rodgers type traits to him. He was so incredibly good at Stanford. He was one of the most easy evaluations you could ever possibly want from a scouting standpoint. Came in, didn't have everything super easy in Indianapolis. Of course, a huge portion of that was due to the offensive line that was surrounding him that led to some of those injuries, that led to kind of the situation that he's in today. But suffice to say, this was a massive bummer for the NFL, for the Indianapolis Colts, for their fans. And there's so much to potentially touch on here. So first of all, I just want to touch base as a fan of the NFL, losing a player the caliber of Andrew Luck. I don't think we ever fully saw the true Andrew Luck and what he was capable of and what he was going to potentially be in this league. Because like I mentioned, when he was even starting to show signs of what he was capable of, he didn't necessarily have the offensive line surrounding him to be truly successful. Then as he started to maybe get some of those players around him, he had some of the injuries, and then of course he retired. So I don't know that we ever truly got to see true prime Andrew Luck. I still think he was developing, and I think this was going to be about the time frame where we were really starting to see him come into his own, and now we are left with a retiring player who, you know, was ultimately not ever really living up to expectations, not quite to any fault of his own. You know, when he was healthy and when he was in there, certainly he was living up to those expectations. I don't want to give off that impression, but from a starting point of expecting to be one of the true NFL greats based off of his scouting report and what he showed early in his career with Indianapolis, to retiring way, way, way too early is just such a massive bummer. And I feel for the Colts and that franchise. And I just think that this is a devastating blow. I don't think we ever really got to see some of the matchups that he potentially could have had. We didn't get enough of Tom Brady versus Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers versus Andrew Luck. You know, Baker Mayfield versus Andrew Luck would have been a fantastic matchup for years to come, in my opinion. And unfortunately, the entire NFL was kind of robbed of some of those matchups and the prime of Andrew Luck's career. So suffice to say, a massively devastating retirement from a great player by all intentions, both on the field and off the field. But I feel good about Andrew Luck and the fact that he is going to be able to get some much needed time away from football. It seems obviously that same level of passion wasn't there based off of some of the rehab and injuries that he's had to go through. If you haven't seen the laundry list of items that he's had to rehab from and try to come back from, this is certainly not a major surprise that he wanted to take time off and really kind of move away from the game at this time. And I honestly just wish him the best of luck moving forward and hope that he finds something that does make him happy once again. So this is a surprising move, maybe not too dissimilar to a Barry Sanders or a Calvin Johnson type step away from football, although I think this one was maybe more injury related and just time to hang it up based off of some of those injuries and the rehab that he's had to go through. It seemed more like Barry Sanders was just ready to call it quits, and he had already seen his career come to fruition. He had done everything that he wanted to accomplish other than obviously winning Super Bowls or having playoff success, because Detroit wasn't that team at that time, not to any fault of Barry Sanders. But this is similar to those two types of players. And if some of the AFC South teams today maybe woke up with a little bit more of a pep in their step, and I guess I mean the fans of those teams, fans of the Texans and the Titans and the Jaguars, woke up with maybe feeling a little bit more confident today because they don't have to face Andrew Luck for the foreseeable future anymore. I get that. I understand that, and I can equate it as a Packer fan at the time when Sanders or Calvin Johnson retired. My first initial reaction was, that sucks, that's a bummer. These are two players that are insanely good in the prime of their careers, and as an NFL fan, I want to see more of them. I want to see Calvin Johnson go up against the Packers cornerbacks. I want to see Barry Sanders go up against that vaunted Packers defense. I wanted to see some of these great matchups. Like I said, I wanted to see in this situation Andrew Luck versus Baker Mayfield. So that's my initial reaction, right? But as a Packer fan, I certainly can understand, well, I want to see the Packers beat the best teams in the league. I want to see them beat the best of the best, and I'm not cheering for any injuries or any players to have to retire early. There's a small piece of me that when Calvin Johnson or Barry Sanders or Robert Smith, to a lesser extent with the Vikings, decided to hang things up a little early, where I'm like, that's a bummer, but I guess if somebody retired today and it was a big-time player, might as well have been a former Viking or Bear or Lion player. I get that. I totally understand that. Again, not cheering for the injury, hoping for the injury, still being disappointed by the injury or their retirement, but maybe it makes things a little bit easier. And at the end of the day, I want the Packers to win Super Bowls. And like I said, while I would prefer that to be against the best players in the league, if that path maybe gets a tiny bit simpler, okay, not the end of the world. I get that. But what we saw from the Indianapolis Colts fans in the stadium, where they were booing Andrew Luck off the field, is by far one of the most classless things that I have seen in football. And this is a player that really gave everything to his team, has rehabbed for years, and for people even after the fact, and some fairly prominent people, including Brady Papinga, former Packer, calling him out for quitting on the team at this point and this stage is beyond insane to me. So this is obviously a player, in my opinion, that if he had stayed healthy and everything would have progressed like normal through his career, that he would still be quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts. This is not an instance where he just got sick of football and is like, I'm done. All right, this is a situation where his injuries have worn on him. He has been in constant rehab, and he hasn't been able to enjoy his quality of life because he is constantly injured. That is a physical issue and a mental health issue that I totally understand and respect. And some people have said, you know what? It's the timing. Had he done this maybe back in April or back in January, they would have totally understood. But the fact that it's 2 weeks before the season for a team that was potentially a Super Bowl contender, that's what they were upset about. And here is my take on that really quick. If Andrew Luck had retired at that point, yes, that would have put you in a more advantageous situation going into the draft and going into free agency. But what were you going to do from a free agency standpoint? Were you going to pick up Joe Flacco, maybe trade for Case Keenum? What were you going to do in free agency that would have been a whole heck of a lot different? Maybe Ryan Tannehill? They're probably not in much different of a spot than what they would have been with Jacoby Brissett. And same thing with the NFL draft. Maybe they try to pick up somebody for the future, like a Haskins. But Daniel Jones, are they in a better position today than what they are with, Jacoby Brissett heading into this season? Probably not by much. So I don't think that necessarily changes much. And let's be totally real here. If Andrew Luck started to have those conversations with the Colts and say, hey, I'm not sure about this, which from the sounds of it happened about 2 weeks ago when things started not progressing with his ankle the way that they were expecting, the Colts would have said, take as much time as you possibly need to figure this out because we want you to be a member of the Indianapolis Colts. And if you can't make it back and you decide not to, we'll live with that going forward. I don't think it would have changed their plans or their season all that much if we're being totally honest. Now, again, maybe they pick up a quarterback for the future and start developing for the future, and maybe it costs them there. You know, maybe they end up with a Joe Flacco or a Case Keenum and somebody that maybe could be a little bit better maybe than Jacoby Brissett and maybe put them in a little bit better of a position. But from a trying to win a Super Bowl standpoint, there's no replacing Andrew Luck on the fly. So I don't buy that. And I do think it sounds like he started having those conversations with the Colts 2 weeks ago. It sounds like they were aware of it. And my guess, again, is that they told him to take as much time as he absolutely needed. So this is a situation where it seemed like his injuries got worse or at minimum weren't progressing the way that he expected. His rehab was just to the point where he's done this year after year after year now, didn't want to spend a ton of time rehabbing. And he had made mention of the fact that if all of a sudden he couldn't put into it as much as he wanted to and the love wasn't there and the passion wasn't there, that he didn't want to, you know, give 50% to this team and not be all in. And I respect the hell out of that as well. So this was just a awful look for the Colts fans. And I want to be clear here too. I fully understand that this is not representative of the Colts fan base as a whole. We all know that in every fan base and in every walk of life, if you get together a huge chunk of people of whatever population it is, there are going to be some loud idiots in that said group. And Packer fans are no different. Colts fans are no different. And some are worse than others. There's no question about that. But that's the fact of the matter. So by no way, shape, or form am I labeling all Colts as these terrible, undeserving fans of Andrew Luck. But it was just a horrible look. And some people have tried to go out and say, you know what, if it wasn't announced at halftime of a preseason game and then got, you know, leaked out through the rest of the stadium, still, you're going to boo him off the field? I just totally 100% do not get that in any way, shape, or form. And the last thing I'll wrap with here on Andrew Luck is that, and I mentioned this on Twitter, this should be a massive warning sign to teams who are starting to develop their quarterback of the future. Teams like the Texans and the Cardinals and the Jets specifically, with Sam Darnold and with Kyler Murray and of course with Deshaun Watson. When you find your franchise quarterback, protect him. Get protection around him. Develop that offensive line as quickly as possible. Find whatever players that you need to provide solid pass protection. Because if you don't, you may end up in the exact same situation as the Indianapolis Colts, where you're getting your quarterback killed. The same draft, RG3, Andrew Luck, both of them, their coaches and their teams did them no favors early in their career. And now because of that, in my opinion, the NFL lost two of its true potential stars in Andrew Luck and RG3. So for those teams specifically, Texans, Cardinals, and Jets, and to an extent, the Seahawks as well. I know Russell Wilson's already well in his prime and well-developed as a starter, but those teams have porous offensive lines and have quarterbacks that should be in this league for a while yet and playing at a high level. For the love of all things holy, go get them some protection, protect those quarterbacks, and don't end up in a similar situation to what the Colts did with Andrew Luck. All right, that ends my rant on Andrew Luck. Let's transition over to the Green Bay Packers because we were certainly not at a lack of news from a Packers standpoint this weekend either. And probably the biggest piece of that news was the news to, I guess, Sunday that Josh Jones was officially released from the Packers. And there's a lot of things to peel back here. First of all, this is something that we've seen coming for some time now, from him asking for a trade to them picking up Ibrahim Campbell to them bringing him back and integrating him with the defense and then having this mysterious type ailment that's held him out of everything. It just seems that the writing was on the wall to move on from Josh Jones for some time now. As I noted today, I think the bigger surprise here was that they weren't able to get a ham sandwich in return for Josh Jones. Not a conditional seventh round pick, not a player that's about to get cut in 2 weeks, not anything. And this is the second time this offseason now that they haven't gotten anything for a player, either Mike Daniels or Josh Jones. Now, I've seen some people say in regards to this, hey, once teams know that they're getting released, all bets are off and, you know, they can teams know that they're going to get cut, so they're just going to try their luck in signing them as free agents. And my response to that is, first of all, you don't have to go back too far to find a very similar situation with Ty Montgomery just a season ago. Ty Montgomery got in the doghouse. It was quite clear that they were going to move on from him and cut him. Before the trade deadline, they were able to get a conditional seventh round pick for him. He was in the last year of his contract, and they still picked up a seventh round pick for Ty Montgomery. So my point here being is, just because a player is guaranteed to be released doesn't necessarily mean that they do not have trade value. In fact, let's start with Mike Daniels. So Mike Daniels signed for basically the same contract that he had in Green Bay. Now, I can understand the Lions and Packers not being great trade partners, but the rumor coming out, or I guess the notes coming out afterwards from Ian Rappaport, is that there were four other teams that were interested in Mike Daniels and were willing to pay him more than what the Lions paid Mike Daniels. So by my account, there are four teams that lost out on Mike Daniels because they weren't willing to give the Packers, or the Packers weren't able to get at least a conditional seventh round pick from one of those teams so that they could secure the rights of Mike Daniels rather than having to negotiate that contract alone. And if they were looking to sign to a 1 year, $8-ish million deal, I would much rather give a conditional seventh round pick out than have to wait and see if I could sign him with other teams that are obviously interested in free agency as well. Just give me the deal that he's on, and I'm happy to give up a seventh round pick for a player of that caliber. So interesting that Gutekunst couldn't get anything for Daniels in that situation, and the same thing with Josh Jones. Now, the immediate rumor that came out from Adam Schefter today is that Jones is expected to get claimed off of waivers, which means that if you are a team that wants Josh Jones, which it sounds like there are those teams out there, instead of clearing waivers, all you had to do was call the Packers and offer, again, either a conditional seventh round pick or a player that you're going to probably be cutting in the next week anyway, and you could probably have that player instead of having to try to claim him off of waivers. And there are a plethora of players that are in a similar situation to Josh Jones that were high draft picks that are on the bubble throughout this league. You would have thought that maybe they would have been able to trade places. And I saw it suggested by somebody on Twitter that, you know, maybe Brian Gutekunst is over his head and, you know, he should have been able to get picks for these players. And well, to an extent, I believe that there should have been, you know, picks out there for both of these players. The one thing that comes to mind is that it's possible that neither of these players would have passed their physicals. And if they don't pass their physicals and then the trade gets voided and then you have to just delay the inevitable and release them anyway, I can see how maybe you don't want to be that GM that's trying to peddle off injured players to other teams via trade. And if that's your concern, and rather than be that GM and try to get maybe a couple conditional seventh round picks that are basically nothing anyway, okay, I could see them releasing those type of players instead of taking a ham sandwich in return. So, and you could say this, you know, about Mike Daniels too, maybe because of his service to Green Bay and because they didn't let him see free agency and they released him at the last minute, rather than trade him to a team that maybe he doesn't want to go to, I could understand maybe at least doing him a solid instead of taking a really awful draft pick in return, maybe letting him choose his team. But interesting again today that they were not able to get anything for Josh Jones whatsoever. And either way, it does certainly show just how much Josh Jones has fallen in the last couple years, that there was no team that was able to offer enough that at least Brian Gutekunst would have been able to say, like, yeah, we'll take it, we'll take our shot with it. So very, very interesting in that regards. And going back to Josh Jones out of college, I'll be the first to admit this was a player that I liked quite a bit coming out of college. I saw a lot of things to like on tape. He was an aggressive tackler. He certainly had all the athleticism in the world. He flew to the football. And I think the biggest change for him between college and the NFL is that in college, he did not take time to think about what he was doing in a good way. Like, he knew what he was supposed to do. He trusted his instincts. He wasn't thinking out on the field, and he was able to go make plays on the football and was an aggressive tackler, got sideline to sideline. He was just a very impressive player. And then when he got to Green Bay, we saw a little of this initially, but then you could see where, you know, his head started to swim a little bit. He was not keen on things well. He was not just playing to his instincts. When he was playing up at the line of scrimmage, he was at his best, and we saw that on a few different occasions. When he had to play back in coverage and when he had to diagnose things, that's when things got a little bit dicey. That's where the defensive coordinator, specifically Mike Pettine, didn't trust him quite as much. He fell out of favor as a safety. Sounds like they wanted him to be more of that dime linebacker, that hybrid type player. Sounds like Josh Jones just really wanted to be a safety, and things kind of fell apart from there. He requested his a trade this offseason. They did not grant it, at least immediately. He was injured to start. He got back in, and he was really back in the rotation right away, which I had noted immediately on Twitter that I was surprised after seeing Jermaine Whitehead and HaHa Clinton Dix and Demarius Randall and some of the and Ty Montgomery. These players get jettisoned when they were unhappy or doing things that they weren't supposed to be or saying things they weren't supposed to be. Green Bay's had a pretty zero tolerance policy, so for them to put him right back in the thick of things was surprising to me. Well, now it's come to fruition, and they've moved on, and they've decided to go obviously in another direction, and Raven Green's going to be a big player that replaces him. Going back to Josh Jones just a little bit, I talked about how I had a high scouting report on him. I had pretty much a high second round pick on him coming out of college, maybe even been a late first. Really liked him a lot, as I mentioned. But then we started, you know, getting notes out of minicamp, rookie minicamp, minicamps and OTAs, and even training camp, how he massively looked the part, that he was ready to play from day one. And he gets, you know, into games pretty early in the regular season. That week three game against the Bengals, you know, for when I've been grading tape, it's still one of the highest graded defensive performances that I've ever given a Packer over the course of the last couple of years. In that game, he had 12 tackles, 2 sacks, 3 tackles for loss, and he was the best defender on the field that day. And it seemed like a star was born and he was ready to take off. And then that was really it. That was, at this point, the very high point of his career, and he's never really been able to match anything close to that since that period of time. So he never put it together, and Green Bay moved on, and at this point, the rest was kind of history. One of the other things that I have noted throughout this offseason is that if you've been somebody who's read my grades and gone by, you know, my week-by-week grades and my end-of-season grades and things like that, well, I'll be the first to tell you, and I talked about this with Peter Bukowski when I was on our rival Locked On Packers podcast recently. He had me on to kind of talk about those grades, and I'll be the first to tell you, I am not, you know, necessarily the be all end all. You know, there's only certain things that I can see. I trust my grades a ton. I put a ton of time, effort, and energy in it. But if you ask, you know, 10 people to grade a play, you may very well get 10 different responses on how they would have graded a specific play. I think the value in it is that you have one consistent grader over a long period of time, and you can pick up on some trends very, very easily. And one of the things that, at least this point, it seems like is that I've been fairly spot on with the people that I have graded negatively, because Green Bay has moved on and purged pretty much every single player that I've had bad negative grades on over the course of the last two seasons. And I noted recently that there were only 4 players remaining that I had poor grades on combined over the course of the last 2 years. And that was Justin McCray, Josh Jones, Reggie Gilbert, and Jimmy Graham. Those were the 4 left standing. And now Josh Jones is gone. So there's only 3 left. And that, again, includes Justin McCray, Reggie Gilbert, and Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham's going to make the team. We know that. Reggie Gilbert and Justin McCray are the 2 left standing. And by no way, shape, or form are they locks to make the 53. There's a decent chance that the only one left standing come regular season is Jimmy Graham. And that's probably due more to contract than what he's put on tape so far. So certainly something to keep an eye on moving forward and what they do with this final 53. But they have purged a lot of players that I had a lot of bad grades on, and I think hopefully that's going to lead to a much better team as the Packers go forward. All right, moving along, in addition to moving on from Josh Jones, the Packers made 3 specific signings today, all of, you know, some interest, I guess. The first signing was James Folston Jr., a 6'3", 233-pound linebacker out of the University of Pittsburgh. He is a rookie. He's already spent some time with the Titans. Interestingly enough, he only started in 5 games over his entire career at Pitt, totaling 47 tackles and only 1.5 sacks. Sounds like he could play some inside linebacker and some outside linebacker. Sounds like he has some flexibility there. It looks like he was playing at outside linebacker today from the reports at camp. His measurables were insane, which of course will be of surprise to nobody. He kind of fits that Brian Gutekunst mold, and he's going to wear number 49 for them moving forward. The next one was Jacquez Kalili, and he is a 5'10", 185-pound rookie cornerback out of UNLV. He's already spent some time with the Jaguars. He kind of moved around colleges a little bit, ending with UNLV. And in his last couple years at UNLV, he had 5 pass breakups and 1 interception, and he will wear number 22 for the Packers. And then last but not least, Nicholas Grigsby. He is a 6'2", 230-pound linebacker. He is not a rookie. He has been a journeyman over the course of the last few years. He spent time with the Rams, Ravens, Patriots, Lions, Ravens again, and now obviously with Green Bay. He has 15 tackles to his name in his career, and he is known more for his special teams prowess than he is for his actual play at linebacker. But he's got some athleticism as well and can be a little bit of a madman on special teams. So it's tough to imagine that these players are anything more than bodies for Thursday's game at this point. You could make an argument with Grigsby's ability to play special teams and their, just how thin the Packers are at linebacker, that maybe if he had a monster game and made a huge impact on special teams, you know, maybe he could push out somebody like James Crawford, or maybe he could, do enough if there was an injury to stick around for a few weeks. But I don't think any of these players are real solid bets by any stretch of the imagination to make the initial 53. I think Grigsby will be some depth and a player that will help out this coming Thursday, and probably they'll move on from him after that, barring something crazy. I think Kalili and Folston Jr. will be two players that are really just vying for time, that they're going to try to make their names as a practice squad player, if anything. You know, they're going to be well behind the eight ball, and they're going to have to press and try to do something spectacular within the next 10-ish days here. Just again, not even that, next 7 days, 6 days, to try to make a name for themselves to make the practice squad. So more than likely three names that are going to be there on Thursday. Try to put some good tape on film for teams around the league, and will probably be moved on from after that. But we'll see. You never quite know. Packers have picked up players very late in the process in the past, and they've found a way to make a team. So if you're on the 90, you've got a shot at the 53. You've got a puncher's chance. So maybe one of these three players will make a name for themselves on Thursday, and who knows? You never quite know what will happen. The next thing that I wanted to touch base on today is the Packers backup quarterback situation. And I know that I am kind of the ringleader for the Tim Boyle fan club, and Tim's been gracious enough to come on the podcast with me and talk some Packers. And, that was obviously fantastic. I want to talk about this from a dead serious standpoint of where I feel like this quarterback battle is at. Because I think sometimes people think that, some of the things that I say with Tim Boyle are tongue-in-cheek. Some people think that, maybe I get blinded by fandom. The truth of the matter is when I evaluate a player, I'm evaluating that player on the merits of their play and what I see in practice and what I see on tape more than anything else. And what I'll say to kind of back this up with Tim Boyle didn't have a great start to training camp. And I'll be the first to tell you that. I think he would probably be one of the first people to tell you that. He struggled with his consistency. And Aaron Nagler, actually, him and I were talking when he was in town, and I did the first Nagler's Never Right with him when I think it was after one of the first couple of training camp practices. And he asked me, he said something to the effect of, do you really think, Tim Boyle is a good number two quarterback, or can be the number two quarterback, and things like that. And after seeing him for a few, those few days in practice, my response to him was basically, do I think at that point he was a good number two quarterback? No, I didn't, based on the week of practice that I had seen at that point. But I also said, do I think he can be the second best quarterback on this team based off of what I had seen from him and DeShone Kizer? I said, yeah, I think he could. And we didn't get to finish our conversation. Had we gone on a little bit further about Tim Boyle, the thing that I would have added to that conversation is that I would have said, I think Tim Boyle will play better in games than he practiced in practice so far. But to be fair, he had not had a great start to training camp, and neither DeShone Kizer nor Tim Boyle were making any waves or giving anybody any confidence that if Aaron Rodgers were to go down, that they would be able to step in and be competent backups at that point. First preseason game comes, and I thought Tim played fairly well. Had a couple throws I'm sure he'd like to have back. He only had a couple series. Threw, of course, the touchdown pass to Jamon Moore. Threw what should have been a touchdown pass the play before that to Jamon Moore. And overall, I thought he had a fairly solid performance. He came back in week two and had a stretch where I think he was like 1 of 9, you know, passing, and then had a touchdown drive before he ultimately got pulled from Manny Wilkins for the rest of that game. And then he gets the start in week three, which I should mention, I was at that practice on Sunday and Monday, the last two training camp practices. And to me, in those two practices, he was better than Kaiser fairly significantly. I thought he had looked much, much better. But I had noted that up to that point, there had been nothing, absolutely nothing in training camp that would have led me to believe that Tim Boyle was even in the conversation for the number two quarterback position, because DeShone Kizer had basically taken every number two rep up to that point. When Rodgers was out, Kizer was the number one guy. And there were a handful of situations at best where Tim Boyle got in with the ones or the twos, but they were few and far between. And there were also actually times where Manny Wilkins stole reps from Tim Boyle as the number three. So there was nothing for me to believe at that time that Boyle was sincerely in the conversation. And then all of a sudden, Rodgers doesn't play week three and Tim Boyle gets the start. And I was really intrigued for a couple of different reasons. One, my first thought was, are they legitimately not playing DeShone Kizer? Do they view Kizer as one of the players that they didn't want to get hurt? Because obviously then the writing is on the wall that Kizer's going to make the team. And then when Boyle plays the whole first half, and then Kizer comes in later, then the question becomes to me, was this something that was planned all along? Were they going to give Kizer two games to start and then Boyle two games to start? Or was this something where Tim Boyle legitimately earned in practice the right to be the backup QB, or in this case, the starting QB with Rodgers out, because he was playing better than DeShone Kizer? And I don't know the answer to that. My answer based off of what I saw in practice is that Boyle was better, but I don't know if that was something that was planned ahead of time. And to this point, we don't know the answer to that. And I don't think we know yet who's going to start this coming Thursday. So that'll be of interest as well. But I think, you know, Boyle comes out in game three and he struggles for those first couple drives. Now, there's a couple extenuating circumstances here. So, you know, on the first drive, he has the play where he slips on the field and has to quickly get rid of the ball. There's another screen pass that's set up and the defender's right there, so he has to just throw it into the ground. And there's a couple plays that he has to kind of just get rid of the ball and he didn't really have much of a chance. There's a third down play to Robert Tonyan where he did have a chance on and didn't complete it. And you could just tell early in the game, he wasn't in a rhythm. And I just looked back. And as soon as he was announced as a undrafted free agent, I did a whole thread on him. You can still find it on Twitter. And one of the things I immediately noted is that he is a rhythm player. And if he is in a rhythm, he can get going very fast and start picking up first downs and picking up drives. And he just really gets in a zone. But when he's not in a rhythm, things can start to go bad fairly quick. And in the first few drives of that game against the Raiders, we saw things not exactly clicking. And, you know, again, he started maybe, you know, 2 of 8, something like that. It was not a great start, to say the least. And then he comes back and all of a sudden things start clicking very, very quickly. He throws a dime to Equanimeous St. Brown that EQ drops. He comes back and he throws an absolute dime for a touchdown to Jake Kumerow. He threw the touchdown pass to Trevor Davis. That was fantastic. He threw a nice pass over the middle to Robert Tonyan and things just started clicking and all of a sudden he was in the zone. And that was the Tim Boyle that I had legitimately seen early in practices last year, throughout practice last year, through some of the practices this year and through some of the preseason games both last year and this year. That's the Tim Boyle that I see. When he's playing with confidence and when he's in a rhythm, he looks like a NFL quarterback. Now, he's probably somebody that's always going to struggle a little bit with accuracy. I don't think he's ever going to be a 75% passer or a 70% passer, probably even a 65% passer. You know, if he would actually get in with the ones in an NFL game, he's probably a 55 to 58, maybe 59% passer in a game. He's probably going to throw some interceptions. But what I see from him at this point is somebody that's unafraid, somebody that's going to attack downfield, who has the ability to attack downfield. His arm is live. He can get it to anywhere he wants on the field. He has good touch on the ball. And when he gets in a rhythm, he can you know, he can put drives together. And I think in the right situation, he could win you some games if your defense was up to the task and maybe if you had a lesser opponent. And you might say, well, yeah, under perfect condition. But my point being here is what you want in a backup quarterback in the league right now is somebody that over a 5-game stretch can go 2-3, maybe 3-2 under a good stretch, but probably 2-3 and at least keep your season alive in some capacity. If Rodgers is out for 5 games, can you go 2-3 and hope that, you know, Rodgers was able to go 7-4 in the other 11 to at least get you to 9-7? That's what you're hoping for. If a 5-game stretch, can you go 2-3? And I think he has the enough ability right now that if you go, you know, he has to play 5 games, I think he can win you 2. And outside of a couple backup quarterbacks in this league, Tyrod Taylor, Ryan Fitzpatrick, assuming that he actually backs up Josh Rosen, we'll see. You know, there's not many backup quarterbacks that I feel are going to do much better than 2-3 in the right situation. So I like what I've seen out of Tim Boyle. Is it perfect? No. Is he ready to be a middle of the line NFL starter? No. But I see potential there. Don't forget that this was one of the top recruited high school quarterbacks coming out of high school. He went to UConn and just things did not click. He had awful statistics at UConn. And I mean, some of the worst statistics you have ever possibly seen. Transfers and then, you know, goes to a smaller school, smaller program and plays okay. But you can see some of those big time NFL throws there. And the last thing I'll say out of Tim Boyle is that I've also seen some of the intangibles. So sitting next to Aaron Rodgers when he's doing his interview, his weekly interview with the media to try to pick up on little nuances and learn what he can from Aaron Rodgers. Staying late after practice and working with Darius Shepherd and Jake Kumerow so that those guys can get better, but he's also obviously working on his accuracy in his game as well. You know, it's just little things like that that I see out of him. He is a grinder. He's somebody that wants this. You can tell. And that's why, to me, at this point, Boyle is ahead of Kizer. And what I'll say about Kizer is we saw some big throws, even in a disappointing performance for DeShone Kizer in this last preseason game, and even coming after Tim Boyle, we saw some big-time throws. There was the great throw over the middle. It didn't end up getting completed, but I thought it was a really fantastic throw deep over the middle. He had an anticipation throw and a deep out that was fantastic. You see some big-time arm talent throws out of DeShone Kizer. The difference to me is that Tim Boyle looks like a quarterback, and DeShone Kizer looks like somebody that's trying to play quarterback. He just doesn't have the confidence. He doesn't have the feel. He just doesn't look like he understands everything that's kind of supposed to be happening simultaneously. And you can see him thinking out there. And again, it's not to say that Tim Boyle's 100% ready or that he's not thinking out there from time to time either. But he has that natural swagger and confidence and poise and moxie about him, where with Kizer, it just looks robotic. And like I said, like he's trying to play quarterback. To me, that's the difference. That's what I see on tape. Am I cheering for Tim Boyle? Hell yes, I am. Am I a fan of Tim Boyle? Hell yes, I am. No questions asked. But if you're asking me, apples to apples, who I think is the better quarterback at this point, I unequivocally think that it's Tim Boyle. And that is not because I like one more than the other. It is because that is how I see it on tape. That's how I see their potential. And that's how I see long-term careers going forward. I think Tim Boyle will ultimately be the better player than DeShone Kizer. What that means, if either of them ultimately ever end up getting on a field, I don't know. Maybe both of them will be in the XFL next year starting for different franchises. We'll see. But I think Tim Boyle will go on to have the better career than what DeShone Kizer has. Of course, only time will tell. Last but not least today, just some quick practice updates. Some players that returned from practice, Kadar Holloman, Danny Vitale, and Blake Martinez, all were back on the practice field. So those are some really nice names to see back practicing. Jay Sternberger also continued to practice. He was still out of the concussion protocol, so that was a promising sign as well. However, we still had a laundry list of players that were missing from practice, including Alan Lazard, Equanimeous St. Brown, Kevin King, Mike Tyson, Ibrahim Campbell, Curtis Bolton, Oren Burks, Malcolm Johnson, Kabian Ento, Rashawn Gary, Greg Roberts, Cole Madison, David Bakhtiari, Jimmy Graham, and Reggie Gilbert. David Bakhtiari being one of the big ones to note there. I'm not sure. I have not heard anything. I tried looking at all the different Packer beat writer accounts to see if anything was announced on that. At this point, I have not seen anything what was up with Bakhtiari, if it was just a planned absence or a day off or what, but obviously that's one to keep an eye out for. All the other ones we pretty much knew about that there was some sort of injury, so hopefully Green Bay can get some of those players. It sounds like Rashawn Gary was walking around the locker room and in good spirits and looked like himself and didn't seem like anything was too off. Curtis Bolton said that he was pretty confident that he didn't tear his ACL, which was the fear. So potentially some good news there. So hopefully some of these injuries start getting better. Hopefully a lot of these players are ready for week one against Chicago, which is coming up insanely fast. So just some injury notes there. Hopefully we get some of these players back sooner rather than later. But time will tell, and we'll go from there. And like I said, hopefully they're ready to play week one. Last but not least, if you haven't yet visited our friends out at the Ticket King, please make sure to do so. They have done a tremendous job of supporting us, so please go out and support them. Still plenty of time to get your tickets, and you are running out of time, however, to use your promo code PACKADAY. Again, that's promo code PACKADAY, no dashes, no spaces. You can get 10% off any order. It is not just Packer tickets either. They have concert tickets, wrestling tickets, whatever you can possibly think of. If there's tickets out there, they probably have it. So go to theticketking.com. Use promo code PACKADAY, get your 10% off, and get whatever tickets that you're looking for today. That 10% promo offer will be done in the next week to 2 weeks here, so definitely go out and do that sooner rather than later. That does it for me. Make sure to check out Jake and Ross tomorrow. Also, I started doing a brand new podcast with Tony Pauline. If you are not familiar with Tony, he is one of the ultimate draft analysts that you will find. He is a fantastic, fantastic analyst when it comes to all things NFL draft. He and I are doing a weekly podcast that will launch on Thursdays. We did our first one last week. It is through Pro Football Network, which, by the way, if you have not checked out Pro Football Network out yet, make sure to do so. They are doing some phenomenal work. Tony is a full-time writer out there now for Pro Football Network. So if you're looking for some great draft material, they have that avenue out there with Tony. They have a podcast with Tony and I. They have a ton of other podcasts going on. They also have a ton of great writers out there. So make sure to check them out if you haven't already. You can find them on Twitter at PFN365. Make sure to check out all of our Packaday podcast episodes first, by the way. That comes first and foremost. Make sure to always listen to our great content here. But then once you've listened to our episodes, then make sure to go check out Tony and I over at Pro Football Network. And I think you're really going to enjoy that podcast as well. So that does it for me. Until next time. And as always, go Pack Go.